the death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza is nearing 31,000, more than 5 months into the war in the Palestinian territory. Several Palestinians have lost their lives after being hit by aid packages airdropped by the United States. And the Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has targeted an Israeli intelligence base in the occupied Golan Heights. Thank you for joining us. Now, more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, and the regime's indiscriminate attacks keep claiming more civilian lives. The latest strikes have hit different locations from northern Gaza to its central and southern parts. 8 people, mostly children, were killed in the southern city of Khan Yunis. Over 12 people lost their lives in Israeli attacks on 2 houses in the town of Al-Karara, northeast of Khan Yunis. Dozens more were wounded as a result. A refugee camp in Jabalia, the cities of Deir al-Balah and Rafah, as well as Gaza City, were also targeted. The total death toll is now nearing 30,880. Also, over 72,400 have been injured in the war taking place with U.S. complicity. Now let's take a listen to comments by some Palestinian parents and medics explaining how malnutrition is affecting children in Gaza.
There is no proper food for the mothers, especially in the recent period, as we noticed that since December until today, there are no babies with normal weights. Most of them are from 2 kilograms to 2.5. We stopped seeing babies weighing 3 kilograms as in the recent period. The last 4 months since October until today, there is no nutrition for mothers. There is no meat, milk, eggs, fruits or vegetables.
I'm a mom who lost her son due to malnutrition, due to circumstances we are going through in Gaza. You can see for yourself where we live, in a school inside a 3-meter tent right in front of toilets. What are you expecting from a sick child living in such conditions? How can he get better?
Yazan al-Kafarna, who passed away, was displaced from the north, and he originally had issues with his muscles, but his health was acceptable. He used to receive proper treatment and healthy food, but with the lack of food after the war began, he got worse.
Starvation in the besieged Gaza Strip continues to take the lives of vulnerable Palestinians. 3 more children have lost their lives as Israel blocks 8 trucks trying to enter the coastal territory. Gaza's health ministry says the children died from lack of water and malnutrition. Starvation has taken 23 lives in Gaza over the recent days. Meanwhile, 5 Palestinians, including children, have been killed and several have been injured after being hit by aid airdropped by the U.S. The incident occurred when parachutes attached to 8 packages failed to open, causing the boxes to fall on crowds that gathered to collect them. Israel has blocked the entry of almost all essentials into the Gaza Strip, including foodstuff, medicine, and water, since the regime began its onslaught on the territory in October. March the 8th marks the International Women's Day, an occasion women across the world celebrate and also use to push for their rights. But the situation is different in Gaza. There, women along with children make up most of the casualties caused by the Israeli war and face a worsening humanitarian situation. Let's take a listen to some of the comments by women in Gaza.
We face the horrors of bombings, endure harsh conditions in tents, and suffer from extreme weather. That leaves no room to celebrate.
Women worldwide eagerly await and celebrate this day, whereas Gazans live in tents and are deprived of rights and unable to celebrate it.
I'm a woman who lost an eye due to bombardment. We are constantly being relocated from one tent to another, moving from one region to the next.
We're displaced and we've experienced the loss of our homes and our children who are martyred. Our hope is to one day celebrate Women's Day in our hometown under ordinary circumstances.
In Beirut, women have gathered in front of the UN Women's Headquarters to slam the US-Israeli genocide and draw attention to the plight of their fellow Palestinians. Let's take a listen to what some of the demonstrators had to say.
We, Arab women, are not slaves. And if these colonial institutions won't do anything, let them leave. It's enough. We can't keep living a normal life with what is happening. No free person in the world, no free person in the United States, Europe, or Arab world can tolerate what is happening. Palestine is free and will stay free.
You know, today is International Women's Day and is a celebration for women taking their rights and not being marginalized. But we are here today to support Palestinian women as they are now living in war, violence and pain. We insist that we won't celebrate if Palestinian women do not take their rights. We are here to support Palestinian women who are exposed to war, to celebrate Women's Day and be happy that women are taking their rights and be more empowered. We should defend Palestinian women to be able to participate and celebrate International Women's Day with us.
We are protesting in front of the UN Women's Headquarters in Beirut because it's International Women's Day and we can celebrate today and talk about the advancement of women and investment in women around the world when there is a genocide happening in Gaza, when the women of Gaza are suffering from the worst and greatest forms of torture, physically, mentally, and health-wise. They are being subjected to exploitation, starvation, impoverishment, displacement, and genocide.
In France and around the world, women and men took to their streets to celebrate International Women's Day. Gender equality is defined differently in different countries, but most agree that all societies must improve their empowerment of women. Robin Mazari reports from Paris.
On the International Day for Women's Rights, demonstrations and pro-feminism strikes were held around France by women and the men who support their fight for equality. In October 1789, the Women's March on Versailles apprehended King Louis XVI at his luxurious palace and brought him to justice in Paris. But much work remains to be done in Republican France. Only 37% of French Parliament is female. Two-thirds of France's working poor are women, in large part because women compose 80% of France's part-time workers.
A return to far-right economic austerity after the COVID lockdowns hurt women more than any other minority. Women are more likely to work in the government and to use social services, so cuts to government budgets hurt them more than men.
In France, one woman is killed every 3 days by their partner or ex-partner. Our government must take more measures to protect the safety of our women. We also need policies which abolish the male-female pay gap and which better protect women from rape.
Israel's attempted genocide of Gaza has had a disastrous effect on women. From the starvation of 60,000 pregnant women to the forced displacement of 1 million females to the inhuman and degrading treatment of women by Israeli forces, according to the United Nations, to the murder of nearly 10,000 women.
Israel's genocide in Gaza is an issue for all feminists and for all humanists. Anyone who thinks that we are at the wrong march are obviously just Zionist imperialists. And they also obviously do not understand what it means to support women with equality, respect, and justice.
Globally, 60% of poor people are women. They are paid 23% less than a man, even when doing the same work, and they spend 2.5 more hours doing domestic chores than men.
We have made some progress pushing women's rights to the forefront, but we must demand many other advancements. We must also not forget about the rights of girls, many of whom suffer from sexual violence, and who must be better protected and better represented by our government.
In France and much of the West, women suffer from widespread objectification and the commodification of their bodies. France allows the use of naked women in public advertising, which many say undermines its regular claim to be a feminist model which other nations must emulate. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Right. thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their continued support for the Palestinian people. The demonstrators also praised the recent operations of the Yemeni army against the US, UK and Israeli-linked vessels. The Latifa Washali reports from Sana'a.
Yemenis from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities and chanted slogans in praise of the Yemeni army's naval operations. They also reaffirmed their full support for the Palestinian people and pledged to continue the protests until the Israeli genocide ceases.
The Yemeni government, all its members, its president and the people have one position, which is to support the Palestinian cause. We must thwart the American, Israeli and British project and stop starvation in Palestine. Our position is an honorable position and our broad movement indicates that the Yemenis have great awareness and, God willing, victories for the nation will be at hand.
Protesters expressed support for the Yemeni army's naval operations against Western vessels, stating that the Palestinian cause helped the Yemeni people overcome the problems created by the Western powers in the country. They believe the conspiracy targets the whole region, not just Palestine or Yemen, and call on all Muslims to unite to thwart Western projects.
We went out today in Sana'a, as you can see, and in the rest of the governorates to announce to the world that our demonstrations and our position is a religious position that will not change with regimes or rulers. We will continue to insist on our position until our brothers in Gaza are victorious, receive food and medicine, and the US-Israeli genocide against them stops. Our army will also continue its operations until the aggression against our country stops. Our operations are escalating, and upcoming strikes will stun both friends and enemies.
Our demonstration here in Sana'a and other governorates is to send a message that we as Yemenis have been able to overcome all the differences and problems that the enemies sought to create inside Yemen. The other message is that we continue to support the Palestinian cause, and what is happening in Gaza is shameful for all Arabs and Muslims. The operations of our army in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab are completely linked to what is happening to the people of Gaza, and the escalation of naval military operations is a legitimate move to support the Palestinian cause.
Recently, the Yemeni army intensified its naval attacks against American, British and Israeli-linked vessels in regional waterways, resulting in the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. It also attacked an American vessel, which the U.S. claimed led to loss of lives among the ship's crew members.
Yemenis assert that the success of Yemeni naval attacks, despite the presence of Western warships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, demonstrates the capability and height of weaponry possessed by the Yemeni army. They believe this achievement should inspire other regional forces to join the fight and support the Palestinians in face of the common enemies. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
Israel says seven of its soldiers have been wounded in a Palestinian retaliatory operation in northern occupied West Bank. Gunmen first opened fire on Israeli troops near the settlement of Homesh. They then detonated an explosive device when the regime's troops pursued them. The Israeli military described the incident as serious and has launched a manhunt for those who carried out the operation. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has hailed the operation as heroic and a natural response to the Israeli massacres in Gaza and the West Bank and its violations against the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds. It vowed that, quote, painful blows to the heart of the Israeli entity and settlers will increase in the month of Ramadan. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a fresh attack against Israel in support of the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. The resistance group says it has targeted the regime's intelligence base in the occupied Golan Heights. The group says it has used drones to attack the Israeli site. No further details are available about the attack. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israel's positions in the occupied territories. It has also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Iran's foreign minister has denounced as illegal and unethical the decision by US social media company Meta to suspend the Instagram accounts of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. In an interview with the Middle East Eye, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the move is a violation of freedom of speech. Amir Abdullahian said Meta's actions are part of a wider campaign by American social media platforms to censor pro-Palestinian voices. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has condemned Israel's genocide in the Gaza Strip and the US support for the onslaught. The Islamic Republic of Iran has long pursued a policy of deepening ties with neighboring and regional states. Russia is one of those countries that Iran has boosted its cooperation with in recent years. The two countries have close economic and political ties and are now eyeing the opportunities to further strengthen and broaden their ties. Here's more.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir www.yemenisrael.org/en. And now you can listen to Arabic English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Joe Biden sears his name in history by becoming the first sitting American president to be sued for complicity in genocide over the United States' abetment in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New Yorker magazine has covered this story and tells us more. As it continues to devour Palestinian lives in the Gaza Strip, U.S. President Joe Biden has urged the Israeli war machine to be given more time. Biden said in an interview that was published on Monday, 4th of March, "I think they have to give this just a little bit of time." The comments came as the Palestinian death toll from an October 7th to present day genocidal war by the Israeli regime crossed 30,500 mark. The Israeli regime launched its devastating war following the Al-Aqsa Storm Operation, a surprise operation by Gaza's resistance groups, including Hamas, against the occupied Palestinian territories that was staged in response to intensification of Tel Aviv's decades-long campaign of occupation and aggression against Palestinians. Apparently trying to justify Tel Aviv's resolve to keep up the military onslaught, Joe Biden said the pressure on the Israeli leadership to move with every ounce of capacity against Hamas is real. Israel has vowed not to stop the aggression until the realization of its declared goals, including destruction of Hamas, which many dismiss as unattainable. Meanwhile, the U.S. president alleged, "I think you're going to see, I'm praying you're going to see a significant downturn in the use of force." On 26th of January this year, the International Court of Justice, the United Nations' top court, ordered the Israeli regime to take all measures within its power to prevent genocide in Gaza. However, the Israeli regime has significantly ramped up its strikes across the coastal sliver ever since. It is also about to go ahead with a ground offensive against the southern Gaza city of Rafah, which has come to host more than 1.5 million of the territory's 2.4 million strong population who have fled the ravages of the war. Joe Biden claimed, "I don't want to see any Palestinians killed. I think that it's contrary to what we believe as Americans." As part of his consistent political patronage of the Israeli regime, the United States, which is Tel Aviv's main benefactor, has so far vetoed 3 United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called for implementation of an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The Israeli aggression also enjoys unreserved military and intelligence support on the part of Washington. Last month, more than 100,000 people voted uncommitted in Michigan's Democratic primary, an attempt to push Joe Biden on the issue. The group Listen to Michigan, which spearheaded the movement in less than a month with very little financial resources, tweeted, "Our movement emerged victorious tonight and massively surpassed our expectations. Tens of thousands of Michigan Democrats, many of whom who voted for Biden in 2020, are uncommitted to his re-election due to the war in Gaza," adding, "President Biden has funded the bombs falling on the family members of people who live right here in Michigan. People who voted for him, who now feel completely betrayed. President Biden, listen to Michigan. Count us out, Joe." Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says history will not erase the Biden administration's disgraceful complicity in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war against the Gaza Strip. Hamas's political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh made the remark recently following a meeting with Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Ismail Haniyeh said the United States was providing a cover for the Israeli regime's war of starvation against Gaza. He was apparently referring to American officials lamenting the situation in Gaza at the same time that Washington retained its unbridled support for the war. Ismail Haniyeh said the American cover for the crime of starvation that the occupation uses as a weapon to achieve political goals is a disgrace to humanity that history will not erase, even if the American administration hides behind misleading statements about the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. The Hamas leader added, "It will not absolve the United States of its responsibility and participation in war crimes committed against defenseless civilians in Gaza." Ismail Haniyeh also denounced what he called the Israeli regime's refusal to provide decisive responses to mediators' efforts to broker a ceasefire. He said Hamas responded to the efforts of the mediator brothers, agreed to the course of negotiations on stopping the aggression, and showed great seriousness and flexibility. But it believes that the Israeli regime is stalling, which the movement Hamas will not accept in any way. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. Joe Biden sears his name in history by becoming the first sitting American president to be sued for complicity in genocide over the United States' abetment in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. The first hearing in the case was being held at the federal courthouse in Oakland, California recently. Human rights bodies and Palestinian U.S. citizens are plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which was lodged by the Center for Constitutional Rights, a New York-based legal advocacy organization, in mid-February. The Center for Constitutional Rights filed the lawsuit on behalf of Dr. Omar al-Najjar, a physician at Nasser Medical Complex in the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, as well as Palestinian human rights groups Defense for Children International, Palestine, and Al-Haq. The lawsuit also names U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The United States has been providing the Israeli regime with all-out military and political support. It has armed the regime with more than 10,000 tons of military hardware and blocked ratification of all United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called for cessation of Israeli aggression in Gaza. The lawsuit states, "If the legal responsibility to prevent an unfolding genocide is to mean anything, Indeed, if the rule of law is to signify anything, courts must have a role and responsibility to enforce these foundational international law principles, adding, the lives of so many more people are at stake. Sadaf Doust, a Birth Justice Fellow with the Center for Constitutional Rights, told The Independent, I'm certainly not aware of another sitting US president who has had charges of complicity in genocide brought against him in a federal court of law, or against his senior cabinet members, a testament in and of itself to the gravity of the US's significant role in this genocide, the crime of crimes. Sadaf Doust noted, a court hearing in the case would force the Biden administration to confront what it has gone to great lengths to deny or even recognize, and through a public, permanent record.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize movies with religious and spiritual and metaphysical themes. One of those movies that we started, in fact, criticizing from the last episode ago, or last week, was Astral. It stands for Astral Projection, and it was produced in 2018, directed by Chris Maul. Well, it's a British horror movie that we tried to criticize, with Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah from the last episode ago. Let's take a listen to a short part of this movie, and then we'll be back and criticize it after the break.
I can't really tell you how to do it. I can only describe how I did it.
Find somewhere comfortable. Rest your eyes. Concentrate on your breathing. You are connected to all that exists.
I am empowered to travel wherever I wish to go.
So, astral projection allows you to contact me.
I don't think you should be messing around with that.
Why exactly you want to try?
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Astral, standing for Astral Projection. It was produced in 2018, directed by Chris Maul, with Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Abdullah. Welcome to the program again.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me again.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Again, always a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Sayyid Abdullah, let me start with you this time in this episode. What are the potential benefits and risks of astral projection?
Well, again, if we assume that there is such a thing, we don't have enough data on that. So it might have been if it happens, it would be like a single event that happens to selective people, and it's just an experience for them rather than for the majority of people. Mm-hmm. So even let's say if you want to do a scientific work on that, you mm-hmm. won't be able to get much data, because if such a thing happens, it would be a very selective few.
Yes.
So in order for you to understand the dangers and the benefits of anything, you need to do conduct a very lengthy research. Mm-hmm. Since no such a thing has happened, we can't actually say what are the benefits and what are the harms.
Know, when you look up, for information about astral projection or out-of-body experience, normally what you end up finding with is that, that most of the experiments on the part of science were not really conclusive. But they even, the scientists didn't reject the whole reality or existence. Well,
science don't reject it, but at the same time, they don't accept it, because science only can explain what it can touch and feels and sees.
Yes.
Now, if we assume hypothetically that this is something that can be done, well, at least one of the benefits is that you have the ability to see beyond yourself, or at least beyond your time frame, beyond your scope, beyond the limitation that are imposed on us by nature itself. So you would be able to extract yourself. Maybe you'll be able to travel through time backwards and forwards.
Exactly.
That could be possible. So these are the benefits. As the harms that I can think of, there's always a possibility, because the body and the soul, the way they create it, they link to each other. There's always a connection between the two.
Exactly.
If you sever that connection, then you're pretty much dead. So even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when talks about sleeping, he said, the ayah says, he takes the souls from the body. فَيَقْبَضَ الَّتِي He holds the one that he wants to take as in death. And then the body dies. And those who've been blessed, he gives them another chance.
You know, according to my information, I've been researching on this, in fact, very subject, in fact, for quite a long time. And I've never found any case of death after astral projection.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it could be one of the risks.
About the psychological distress, maybe there are some.
So, like I said, it depends on the
consequences.
It depends on the experience of the people. So that, like I said, because we haven't done, we don't have an actual research where we bring 100, 200, 300 people, we put them in a room, and okay, guys, you project yourselves outside so we can see what happens, and then we measure after an hour, five people would come. And maybe one don't return, then we have a percentage.
I see.
So we don't have that. Like I said, so this is just hypothetical.
Mm.
In that case, it could happen where one not return.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it.
Thank you very much, Sid Abdullah.
No worries.
Let's take a break by listening to another part of the movie, Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Moll. And then we'll be back with the criticism. Don't go away.
Astral attempt number two.
It doesn't make any sense. Surely you can't record your own spirit.
It felt like a dream, but it was so real.
Don't believe everything you're about to see.
It's a dream. Insidious Diaboli. Libera Nos Domine. It's a pleasure and too unsecure to be Fatius. The Retarded. Alice! With the Father!
You brought something here with you.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sid Abdullah and Brother Yasser helping me as my guest speakers as always. Helping me criticize the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Moll. Brother Yasser, what are the ethical or moral implications of astral projections, possibly? Some people, a friend of mine, for example, Brother Yasser, used to say, he was one of those people who astral projected all the time. And, of course, he repented from what he was doing. He told me, a couple of years ago, when he used to do the astral projection or AP, he used to leave not only his body, but the town. and he went like to different places, and he violated the privacy of other people. Well, he used to like do it, and he said that, for example, I was on the phone and I was doing it, and then I used to say, for example, what the other person on the other end of the line was wearing. That's obviously the breach of which we call it, the violation of the privacy.
Also, one thing that needs to be mentioned that was not mentioned is that obviously when we understand the realms of existence, now unfortunately many people, even though the astral project, have not really understood the realms of existence. Like, for example, okay, I astral projected, does it mean you left the physical realm? Not necessarily. And even right now in the physical realm, there are levels of the physical realm that you and I have no access to. So you haven't left the physical realm. All you've done is that you have manipulated space to a certain level. Or even worse, so another being who has access to a higher realm is manipulating you in time and space. This is one of the ethical things, if you want to speak about, is this. Is there are other beings that have been created, whatever you want to
different
call them.
Different entities or life forms.
Like jinns, for example. Yes. Let's just put it out there. Jinns, for example. Jinns, for example, have the ability to transverse between realms of existence. Generally speaking.
From the physical to the astral.
Not the astral. Again.
And also mental realm. But
again, these
above
again,
that they can't.
Even
according to Islamic mysticism.
Islam has three realms of existence. You have the realm of the intellect, the realm of imagination or barzakh ilam, and the realm of physicality. These are the three realms in Islamic existence. Now, you, like I mentioned, the physical realm itself, you spoke about mental, astral, may still be in the physical realm. Right?
Yeah, it is.
It is a physical realm.
Actually, it is.
So therefore, it has nothing to do
different
with...
different layers.
Exactly. It has nothing to do with the higher realm, which is the barzakh realm. Which has nothing to do with the higher realm.
I was talking about another classification. Even in Islamic mysticism, it's been like somehow talked about or discussed by Mullah Sadra, for example.
This is Mullah Sadra's thing.
Ibn Sina,
This, even this Ibn Sina. Ibn Sina did not have barzakh. But Ibn Sina had two realms of existence.
Yeah, true.
The barzakh realm came with Sheikh Ishraq, illumination, philosophy. Why? Because he was able to actually travel to that realm. And he saw that realm. And he saw other entities. And he saw other beings. And he saw cities. And he saw planets.
Yeah. But I'm talking about that kind of classification which go from the top, like bottom top, like physical realm, astral realm, causal realm, and the divine realm. There are three to four realms of existence.
But even then, if you look at three, four of existence, you have to classify, is astral part of barzakh or not? If not, then it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. Right. No, I don't have any kind of like issues with what you're saying about the astral being a part of the physicality.
Exactly. So all you're doing, you are just manipulating time and space.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a difference.
Yes, true.
So therefore, you have not actually done anything. Whereas, for example, if a person is able to attach himself, so therefore this person himself can therefore be manipulated by beings who have access to higher realms, like the jinn, for example, who have
like the jinn, like maneuvering around the physical and astral realm. But when it comes
don't
to the
astral,
causal,
because not causal realm,
but the divine realm or the causal realm, they can't.
Because, no,
they can't
again,
infiltrate.
I disagree with you with the use of causal, because the realm of the intellect is the cause of the barzakh realm.
Right.
The barzakh realm is the cause of the physical realm. So for you to say causal, you are making a
no. I'm just talking about that kind of classification which is out there. Of course, it totally varies from or differs from the Buddhist or Hinduist type of, which we call it, classification, which goes from like physical, etheric, astral, mental, causal, spiritual, and divine. This is another different story, actually.
Yeah, but again, so you're saying causal. What do you mean by causal? Do you mean that this all causes effect and effects come from this realm?
No. By causal, they don't mean cause and effect.
It's just the name of a realm.
Yeah, that's
fine.
The name of like the divine, the spiritual realm.
That's fine.
That's a different thing.
Exactly. For example, you have to understand that even if you make it into seven, or some make it into nine, within the created existence, there are three realms, each having a vertical reality, each affecting the other.
I see.
There is no escape from it.
Okay.
Whatever is in the barzakh realm is in the intellect, but in the intellect there's more than it.
Mm-hmm.
Like in any cause and effect.
Yes. True.
The physical realm is the same with the barzakh realm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a person just travels within space and time, it does not necessarily mean that he has left the physical realm.
Yeah, right.
So the thing is that he, even then, okay, he's seeing things, but he, like in the movie, they show that you can't affect it. Okay, fine, I agree. Mm-hmm. If it's remaining within the physical realm, yes, you can't affect.
Mm-hmm.
Or for example, someone can think they can go back in time and change. No, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that that's impossible to happen.
Right.
Because, again, as we, for lack of a better word, and the Marvel's movies,
yes,
the timeline is something that is really set. It is something you cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you cannot see it. Right? Again, if you go on into a higher realm, you can see a timeline that is there. What happened in the past, you cannot affect it in order for the future to change.
Mm-hmm.
That is not possible in the reality of the bigger picture. But in your mind, you can
do it. Although the concept of time is subject to various definitions, by the way.
Time is like a fourth dimension of the physical realm.
That's in the physical realm. But when you go above,
there's like no such thing as time. There's no time.
There's even no if there is the concept of time, it's totally different from this physical realm.
Exactly. It's something else.
Yeah.
Because that the time of this world is an effect of a higher time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the concept of time is different.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser, and thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Maul. Of course, we haven't finished the criticism of this movie, and hopefully in the upcoming episode, we'll do so. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Begin by getting into a comfortable seated position. When you're ready, softly close your eyes and tune in to your heart in the middle of your chest and a couple of inches inwards. And let all of your awareness center in on this space. Wiggle your fingers and your toes. And when you're ready, open your eyes back to the world around you.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight.
Experts say the Zionist regime's plans and ambitions in the Eastern Mediterranean will not be complete unless it confiscates Gaza's gas field. but to no avail. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, "The terrifying scale of the destruction the Zionist regime's war machine has wrought in Gaza indicates that the goal of this onslaught is not merely to destroy the resistance movement Hamas. Rather, we can infer that this aggression has been a long time coming, as the Zionist regime waited for an opportune time to unleash its full military force against the besieged Palestinian territory. Some have argued that the Zionist regime's goal is to push the population of Gaza into the Sinai, and the October 7th events provided the pretext for this operation to begin in earnest. Zionism, as an ideology, is based on the displacement of landowners through intimidation and cutting off vital infrastructure, paving the way for Israeli settlers to move in. But there is another more important reason behind the Zionist regime's current war. The promising natural gas wealth found in Eastern Mediterranean, specifically off the coast of Gaza. The Levant gas field includes the shores of historic Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and the opposite side, the island of Cyprus. This field is estimated to contain about 122 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. As for the Palestinian shores of Gaza, British Gas confirmed in 1999 that the reserves in Gaza Marine are estimated at 1.1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. That same year, the Palestinian Authority granted British Gas a 25-year contract to exploit the Gaza Marine natural gas field. Until now, after 25 years, the Palestinians have never benefited from it. This is due to the obstacles that the Zionist regime placed under many pretexts, including, for example, the fear that the revenues will go to finance terrorism against the Zionist regime. Several Israeli regime governments, from Ehud Barak to Benjamin Netanyahu, have given approval to the Palestinians on several occasions to begin exploiting the Gaza Marine. However, every time, the Zionist regime retracted its approval. It is obvious the Zionist regime is keen not to give the Palestinians any sense of sovereignty over their land or territorial waters, which is further evidence of Israel's premeditated intentions to displace the Palestinians from their historical lands and confiscate their natural resources. In addition to Gaza's natural gas, it is worth pointing out that the Zionist regime is stealing Palestinian natural gas from the Minged oil and gas field in the occupied West Bank on the pretext that the field is located to the west of the Armistice Line of 1948. While the Zionist regime has never been serious about the so-called peace process or the Palestinian right to independence and self-determination, Netanyahu has taken an exceptionally hard line. The regime's longest-serving leader chose the path of economic peace. At the same time, he has focused on mega-projects tailored primarily to benefit Israelis, while potentially offering secondary benefits to the Palestinian population. In this regard, he has focused on two main areas: transforming Israel into a gateway and corridor linking East and West, and making the regime a global center for natural gas exports. On the first goal, the centerpiece is planned India-Middle East-Europe Economic Corridor, or IMEC, which will connect India with Europe via the Persian Gulf and Israel. In addition, amid the ongoing risk of attacks in the Red Sea, Egypt and the UAE have worked with the Zionist regime to establish an alternative land route with Saudi Arabia and Jordan to bypass the Yemeni threat. As for the second goal, Israel has made significant efforts to conclude gas deals with Cyprus, Greece and Egypt. But Israel's plans and ambitions in this regard will not be complete unless it confiscates Gaza's gas reserves. Netanyahu has made clear his intentions to bypass the aspirations of the Palestinian people, having noted last year that they should be part of the peace process, but they should not have a veto over the process. The Zionist regime's desire to seize Gaza gas can partially explain Netanyahu's intransigence when it comes to ceasefire initiatives, as this project hinges on Israel maintaining security control over the territory and expelling the Palestinian population. The Zionist regime's ministers have spoken openly about these goals since the start of the war. Among the evidence that proves the validity of this analysis are two important matters. First, it is surprising that Israel has granted licenses to three companies to explore for natural gas in the marine area off the shores of Gaza and Israel. This Israeli move confirms that Israel's deliberate intention to steal the Palestinians' natural gas wealth, reasoning that Gaza, Palestine, is not a sovereign state and therefore has no right to demand sovereignty over the special economic zone according to the law of sea, although Palestine has been accepted as an observer member of the UN in 2012. The Zionist regime has not yet signed the UN Convention on the Sea and has not even demarcated its maritime borders. The Zionist regime is aware of the enormous amount of political support it enjoys from the Western Europe and the United States. These actors just participated in the latest Munich Security Conference, whose main focus was on the normalization between the Zionist regime and Arab states by expanding the Abraham Accords. The Zionist regime views the resistance movement Hamas and all Palestinian resistance groups as a bottleneck to its greater regional ambitions, most notably the seizure of Gaza's natural gas wealth. Ultimately, the goal of an independent Palestinian state, or at least one in which Palestinians can control their own natural resources, is attainable, but first they must withstand the Zionist regime's onslaught in Rafah. This could be Israel's last chance to displace the Palestinian population of Gaza.
Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.